count our blessings that we're not in a northern latitude than where we are. Downpours of rain and blasts of wind and cold. That's different than 20 inches and 30 inches and 40 inches of snow. That's in the Midwest. I mean, just like in Oklahoma. 20 inches of snow in Oklahoma. And then 30 inches and 40 inches going north. And then call the devotee in New York and, you know, they can't get out of their house. They're snowed in. Dinishta, he's snowed in. So, here we are having kirtan and I want to invoke that image, for my purpose, at least. Nice painting of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Advaitacharya, Gadadhar Pandit, Shivas Pandit, Jagatananda Pandit, Raghunath Das Goswami, Surup Damodar, Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya, Haridas Thakur, all gathered together discussing topics of Srimad Bhagavatam together by the banks in the Narendra Sarovar with Pratap Rudra Maharaj just paying his prostrated obeisances, the king falling at the feet of all those assembled great personalities. Even before Lord Chaitanya came to Jagannath Puri, Maharaj Pratap Rudra was a great Vaishnava, a great devotee of Lord Jagannath, a great devotee of Krishna. It's described that when he something like Maharaj Ambarish described in Srimad Bhagavatam that every day he would spend hours every day worshipping his Krishna deity. So Maharaj Pratap Rudra also, he had a guru. Kashi Mishra was his guru. And the headquarters of Maharaj Pratap Rudra, his capital, was in Cuttack. But he also, because he's the king, he had a palace also in Puri. And he was so interested in promoting Vaishnavism and promoting knowledge and culture that when he heard of this incredibly learned person in Bengal, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he personally sent a personal invitation for him to come and be my head priest in Jagannath Puri. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya left Navadvipa before Lord Chaitanya was born. It was perfectly fitting their leela. So his brother, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother, Vidya Vachaspati, he remained behind and he had his school in Vidya Nagara. And Lord Chaitanya would go as a small boy and completely challenge and completely annihilate and defeat in vigorous debate all of Vidya Vachaspati's students. And then later came to meet Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But King Pratap Rudra, in addition to inviting Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, it was his practice. He would worship all morning long and he would go and tend to his royal duties. And then in the midday, before he would go to perform his midday duties, he would go to the house of Kashi Mishra, the king, sit at the feet of his spiritual master, massage the feet of his spiritual master, and describe to his spiritual master what he saw in the darshan of the deity and receive a report from his spiritual master on how the worship of the deity went for the day. It was like his absorption. It wasn't like, okay, let me see that report, okay, next, let me see that report, okay, next. It was his life and soul. Lord Jagannath, and being at the feet of Kashi Mishra. So when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya requested a place for Lord Chaitanya to stay, my dear king, you must know of a suitable place. Immediately, he's the king, he knew the suitable place. In the house of Kashi Mishra, there's a very quiet, remote place. It just happens to be right next to my palace. Because where his spiritual master stayed was like huge estate, which is part of the royal palace. So there, the painting that Maharaj Prataparudra chose to commission, the subject matter was the devotees gathered together and just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It could have been kirtan. That also would have been very appropriate, but in this particular very famous painting, it was hearing Gadadhar Pandit speak Srimad Bhagavatam and discussing the topics together. The topics of Krishna. So, I became inspired just thinking about our morning classes, what might be a suitable topic to discuss, especially given we have our bright young students here, like your good self. And are you two brothers?
Yes.
Yeah? You look like brothers. You're the older brother?
No.
You're the younger brother? Is he a good older brother?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Is he a good younger brother? Sometimes. What's the duty of the older brother? Huh?
Take care of him.
Take care of him. And how do you take care of him? What's the best way? We're speaking now spiritual standards. The best way to take care of him?
Defend him?
Not just defend him and protect him, but set a good example. Set a good example. And then he'll become a better younger brother. You set a good example, he'll be a better younger brother. And what's the good example? From the scriptural point of view. One part of what we're going to hear, we're going to describe the pastime, pastime, of Bharat Maharaj. And in the life of Bharat Maharaj, he showed compassion. But it was misplaced compassion. Just like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he was exhibiting a very wonderful quality. He wasn't the older brother. He was the middle brother. But he had compassion. And in his compassion, he chose a principle of nonviolence. But for a kshatriya, when there's protection, sometimes one has to be very strong to protect people that are innocent. Otherwise, they might be hurt and abused and seriously harmed by mean-spirited persons. So as a kshatriya, not maybe you or me, but it was his duty to give protection and defense, but he chose nonviolence. So this is a lesson, this is going to describe the necessity, one dimension of, the necessity of spiritual attachment in order to achieve material detachment. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 5th chapter, Krishna explains to Arjuna the principle of detachment. Because Arjuna is not getting it. You're not getting what devotional service is. Devotional service is also described in Bhagavad Gita as buddhi yoga. Yes? Buddhi yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. And what Arjuna wants to do is take a different meaning of buddhi yoga. He's thinking, intelligence. Knowledge is better than fruitive work. Yes, I want to go to the mountains and live in a cave and just get away from this fruitive work. This yavaram ghore, this ghastly warfare. And when Krishna is speaking in the fourth chapter about the virtue of knowledge, knowledge is so wonderful. It's like a boat you can cross over the ocean of material existence. And Arjuna is going, yes, knowledge, detachment. Knowledge is so wonderful that it can burn into ashes all the results of one's fruitive activities. Yes, knowledge, detachment. I'm ready to go. Knowledge is so wonderful. Yes, off to the forest. And then Krishna points to the battlefield. Armed with knowledge, stand and fight. So at the beginning of the fifth chapter, Krishna says, why are you giving me these equivocal instructions? On the one hand, you say, knowledge is better than fruitive work, which is true. But then you're advising me to engage in this ghastly warfare, this like really horrible fruitive work. Please explain. Why doesn't Arjuna get it? For the same reason that we don't get it. Or anyone that explains something that's very simple and they just don't get it. You ever had that experience? Not just, parents trying to explain things to their kids, it's sometimes kids trying to explain things to their parents. They just don't get it, right? Something very simple. Or somebody to a friend of yours, why take up devotional service or why something. They don't get it. They don't get it because they're holding on tightly to something else. They don't want to let go of that something else. So they can't receive what you want to give them. They're holding on. Arjuna was holding on to a conception that said knowledge leads to detachment, and detachment means abandonment of karma. Karma, sannyas. That was his conception. Knowledge leads to detachment, leads to karma, sannyas. Give up your activity and go to the forest. That's what knowledge meant to him. But Krishna was speaking of knowledge and devotion. And then he explains that what is called renunciation is the same as yoga. Or linking with the Supreme, because you can't be renounced without linking with the Supreme. You can't say no to something without saying yes to something else. Or here's the example that Prabhupada gave. Listen, very interesting. It's kind of a mystical example. Supposing you have a glass and it's filled with ink. And the atmosphere is inky, and you empty out the glass that's ink and put it back in an inky atmosphere, and time is going to become filled with ink. But if you empty the glass and fill it with milk, it won't become filled with ink. That was his example to explain what I just said. In order to achieve detachment, there must be attachment to the Supreme. And where there's attachment to the Supreme, automatically what follows is there's detachment from all else. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam, which says, by the process, through the process of hearing Krishna Katha, hearing about Krishna, three things take place naturally, in natural sequence. bhakti awakens. Bhakti para bhakti paresha anubhava viraktir anyatra cha. So those three things are, just to unpack that, a natural feeling of devotion and love and wishing to serve the Supreme awakens, just from hearing. And para isha anubhav. Isha means controller. Para isha is the Supreme controller. Anubhav. One develops some affinity for the object. So wishing to do some service unto the Supreme, attachment to the Supreme, and detachment from all other things. Viraktir anyatra cha. Like, in the same verse, the comparison is given by the eating process. Supposing someone is fasting. You guys fast on Janmashtami? This last Janmashtami. Yes? Did you fast? How did it feel? It was nice, huh? All the way till midnight, did you fast?
Well, I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I fasted.
Fasted a long time. And what happened when you, after fasting a long time, you felt a little, like, weak?
Not so weak?
Maybe you're a yogi. We were traveling during this yatra, and I forget which place we were going from and to, but I was with Subal, a devotee from Chicago, and in the same car came this family. They live in San Jose, California, but they were visiting Tirupati. Must have been Tirupati. So they were visiting Tirupati because, you know, they were from nearby. And then they were on their way back to Hyderabad, and then they were going to fly the next day to California. And their son, about your age, came in, and he looked at Subal, and he looked at me. He put his head back and started rolling his eyes in his head and started, like, entering into some kind of mystic trance or something. And they did that for quite a while. His parents were just carrying on, like, you know, la-di-da, and then he looked at us and did it again. He was like, you know, showing us, putting a whammy on us or something. You're devotees, but look at this one. I'm a yogi. So we had a good exchange with that family. It was nice. When you're fasting, after fasting for some time, the body becomes a little fatigued, weary, tired. Not like necessarily you need to go to sleep, but just like weak. And when you start to break the fast, three things happen. The verse describes hunger subsides. That's one thing. And strength comes back to the limbs of the body, second thing. And then, at a certain point, one feels satisfied. Like, you know, someone could say, would you like something more? And the answer is, no, thank you. You know how it is with servers. I've noticed sometimes, take more, and someone says, no, and they put it on their plate anyways. That's supposed to be like a friendly gesture, but some people like get disturbed. No, I can't take more. And you don't have to have someone tell you, now you're feeling strength coming into your body again. Repeat after me. You feel it. It's something you experience. And your hunger subsides and you feel satisfied. Someone doesn't have to tell you, okay, you've had enough. You can tell them, no, thank you, I've had enough. As with the eating process, those three things are experienced. So also by the process of bhakti, specifically mentioned as the process of hearing about Hari, Hari Katha, those three things happen. A desire to serve, an attachment or affinity for the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. It just happens. So, back to fifth chapter Bhagavad Gita, what is called renunciation Real renunciation is attachment to the Supreme, because no one can be truly detached without attachment to the Supreme. Bharat Maharaj exhibited incredible detachment. Let's do a little quiz section here, especially for you Bhagavatam readers. Who is the father of Bharat Maharaj? Maharaj Nabhi, and his mother's Meru Devi. And who is the father? This is not so many generations from Lord Brahma and the Swayam. So we'll go down. Swayambhuva Manu and his direct son, born from his own body, was Swayambhuva Manu, the first of the 14 Manus, and directly also was his wife, the queen, Shatrurupa. And they weren't born like, you know, youngsters and then they grew up. They appeared mature, adults, ready to do their Manu service. And directly the son of Manu, well, he had two sons, Uttanapada and Priyavrata. But Uttanapada was the younger brother. You're the younger brother, right? Uttanapada was the younger brother, and the older brother was Priyavrata. And following the lineages of descendants from Uttanapada, what we're reading in the Bhagavatam section at the temple is Prachini Bari. He was the last of that line. And when he left, and his sons, the Prajetas, they became Mahabhagavata Vaishnavas, that line was broken. So the elder son had to become king. Priyavrata became king. And Priyavrata. So Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu, Priyavrata, Angidra was his son, and Nava was his son, and Rishabdev was his son, and Bharat Maharaj was his son, and 99 other brothers. So Rishabdev was an incarnation of the Lord, a Shaktyavesha avatar, incarnation of the Lord, and Rishabdev instructed his 100 sons, and the eldest of those 100 sons was Bharat, after which Prabhupada would say so, like consistently, the whole of India, in fact, at that time was the whole planet, was named after him. He was such an important king. And today it's kind of shrunk down to, like, that's what India is known as, Bharat Varsha. But before it was Ilavrati Varsha, and he was such an important king, the planet became named differently, Bharat Varsha. So Bharat Maharaj assumed the throne following Rishabdev. Imagine being king after Rishabdev, an incarnation of the Lord. And he was married. He had a queen, very qualified queen, and they had 5 sons. And even when he was very young, and the sons were quite young, not yet ready to ascend to the throne, he was so absorbed in his life of devotion that he left the kingdom. Detachment. He left his queen, left his sons. The sons assumed the throne in a due course of time. And he went to the forest to perfect his spiritual practices. The details a little bit are described. He chanted mantra and performed, because it's still in Satya Yuga, he performed the process of meditation. And the mantra that he chanted was Gayatri mantra, Rig Veda mantra, is Gayatri mantra. And with that Gayatri mantra, and his process of meditation, he was absorbed the place where he went was Prabha Ashrama, very special place by a sacred river. And he set up, he was the king, but he lived very simply. He set up a small cottage, and morning till night he was absorbed. He was fixed on bringing his full concentrated attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which enabled him to be as renounced and as detached as he was. And Prabhupada would speak about this, particularly Sanatana and Rupa Goswami. How much effort do people make? Think about it. And he would speak about it, to get votes to become prime minister or the president. I mean, our current president, he's already leaving the White House and going on campaign to, like, get elected the next time. And how many millions of dollars and how many hours of time and how much austerity to get elected into that high post. And here's the king of the whole world, and he's already there. This poor fellow in Egypt, he's only been around 30 years. They want him out. But Bharat Maharaj, nobody wanted him out. He was in place with wonderful family, virtue, wealth, power, devotion, everything anybody could possibly want in a worldly sense, and he was detached from it all and went to the forest to achieve spiritual perfection. He was living very peacefully, absorbed, until one eventful evening night when torrential downpour of rain, maybe something like what we experienced this morning at around 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, 6 o'clock this morning, torrential downpour of rain, and that caused the river by where his cottage was to swell quickly. And by the side of the river, on the opposite shore, was a pregnant deer. And she was attempting to cross the river, but it was moving very swiftly. And then suddenly there was a roar of a lion. And she became very afraid, and she slipped and fell into the river. And as she fell into the river, she had a miscarriage, and little baby deer was born, and the mother deer drowned in the swift river. And there's this little baby deer. So here's Bharat Maharaj, a powerful king, the protector of his citizens, went into the river and collected this baby deer. So he then became the protector of the baby deer. And so I want to read some of the verses and some of the purports that are connected to this. What happened then? Prabhupada writes about where to repose compassion. And if you don't have the proper center when you repose this elevated condition of compassion, then it can be to your detriment. Explained that the Sukadeva Goswami explained that saintly persons naturally feel compassion for others. The great King Bharat, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. So this is hopefully the signal that this is appropriate for us. We're not Bharat Maharaj, we're not living in a forest, but we're practicing devotional service. We're striving for this very wonderful goal of going back to Godhead and eternally engage in our loving service with Krishna. While doing so, we should be very vigilant where we're reposing the natural tendencies of compassion, etc. Because if it's not properly reposed or directed, one can fall from one's spiritual position. By studying the activities of Bharat Maharaj, we can learn the art of becoming completely freed from all material attachment. As it will be revealed in later verses, Bharat Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer due to being overly compassionate for this infant deer. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled and we may fall down onto the material platform. Maharaj Bharat's compassion for the deer was the very beginning of his fall down into the material world. Now, it wasn't just that he was compassionate, but it was not upon... It was the same with Arjuna. The object of Arjuna's compassion was on the platform of the body only. And because he was an elevated person, he was ready to be totally detached. Let them take the kingdom. I mean, the issue with Arjuna was, our duty is we're kshatriyas. So Krishna went with his peace offer. Kshatriyas are to be maintained by taxes, by ruling, by giving protection, and those who they protect, they offer taxes. So although Krishna's message, peace message, was although they're the rightful heir of the entire world as their kingdom, you keep the entire world as your kingdom. Just give them 5 states. No. Give them 5 cities. No. Give them 5 villages. No. There must be war. I can't live on the same planet with those 5 brothers, especially Bhima. Declaration of war. So Krishna just walked out of the assembly. Because that's the means, that's the duty of a kshatriya. So Arjuna's position was, I'll stop being a kshatriya. I'll become a mendicant instead. I'll just go live on roots and berries and whatever is there in the wild and stop being a kshatriya. Karma sannyas. Krishna said, no. You have, it's not your qualification, it's not your duty. Just perform your duty. And always think of me. So, Bharat Maharaj had given up his duty as king for the higher purpose of achieving spiritual perfection. But when compassion is applied to another, not for their spiritual well-being, but simply for the welfare of the bodily condition only, that can lead to a problem. It is a problem, and it can lead to further problems. So, what happened was, gradually, Bharat Maharaj, he was like the mother and the father and the best friend and the caregiver, and you know, he was everything. He completely doted upon the deer. To such an extent, he even didn't have time for his spiritual practices. He diminished and gradually he stopped his spiritual practices. gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about his spiritual advancement. The great king Bharat Maharaj began to think, alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, an agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has now lost its relatives and friends and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me, and I have become its father, mother, brother, and relatives. The deer is thinking in this way, and it has full faith in me. But his Kshatriya spirit is prevailing. So he's now in the role of a Kshatriya once again, extending protection to a helpless being. But his spiritual attachment to the Supreme has slackened. And so that means his detachment has slackened, and now he's becoming attached on the bodily platform. Prabhupada writes, when a person is advanced in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes very sympathetic toward all living entities suffering in the material world. Good, it's natural, it's wanted. Now where do you repose that natural awakening of compassion? Naturally, such an advanced person thinks of the suffering of the people in general. However, if one does not know of the material sufferings of fallen souls and becomes sympathetic because of bodily comforts, as in the case of Bharat Maharaj, such sympathy or compassion is the cause of one's downfall. If one actually is sympathetic to the fallen, suffering humanity, he should try to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. Not easy to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. It's easier to take care of their hunger or education or their medical something. That's not completely easy, but it's easier than elevating people to spiritual consciousness. Try it. Not easy. But that's where that compassion should be applied. And there's some faith behind that. The faith that says, from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows. Like a shadow follows an object. So, let's see. There's some light. There's my hand and there's the shadow on the line here. So, if I want to move the position of the shadow, you move the position of the hand. They can't just move the position of the shadow without moving the position of the hand. So this is the spiritual well-being, and that's the material well-being. The material well-being follows spiritual well-being like the shadow follows its object. If there's a problem in the material well-being, it's the root of it is something with spiritual well-being is not in order. So attend to the spiritual well-being and the material well-being will follow. But just try to adjust the shadow doesn't work. It doesn't endure. It's not satisfying to the other person. There's a mode of goodness satisfaction that says, I've done something to help another person. And we all know what that mode of goodness happiness is. When you go out of your way to do something to help another person, you feel something. It's called mode of goodness happiness. And it's nice. Mode of goodness nice. But it doesn't address the deeper need of the soul. And that's what happened with Bharat Maharaj. To the degree that he abandoned, not didn't happen at once, but he abandoned gradually his spiritual purpose. All of these things that he was detached from in the world, such strong spiritual attachment that he was able to walk away from his material attachments, he again became materially attached and became covered and lost his spiritual attachments because he wasn't sufficiently vigilant. I'll read some more portions of the purport. It was very dangerous for Bharat Maharaj to sacrifice all his regulative principles simply to take care of an animal. The principles enunciated in Bhagavad Gita should be followed. He quotes the verse from Bhagavad Gita 2:15, where, O best of men, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. So the path of liberation is where your mind is steady. So outside in this field of duality, you see something that's nice, something that's not nice, something that's pleasing, something that's disturbing. So you may attend to something that's disturbing, but when you attend to something that's disturbing, don't leave your spiritual consciousness. You, on the strength of your spiritual consciousness, you go there. Let's give a different example. Supposing you're reading something or having discussion, or something comes to your attention that there's a need that I have to improve myself, and I need to work on something. And you get through hearing a class or having a discussion or something, you get a sense of what you need to do to improve. Beware of doership mentality that completely loses the sense of who you are, the person from whom you receive that wisdom, whether it's super soul or another individual, and you busy yourself like anything trying to do this improvement program. What happens is it doesn't endure. It fizzles. And the reason is because you lost the spiritual purpose and the spiritual strength and the spiritual momentum and the connection with Krishna to do so. Because when you go into the doership mode, you forget Krishna. It's called the mode of passion. And in the mode of passion, it's not the place where you remember, place from which you remember Krishna. It's, I'm going to do it. I'm going to strive and I know I can do it. I've done so many things in my life, and this is one of those things, I'm going to do it. And Krishna just disappears. And those who are guiding you in spiritual life, that relationship also becomes diminished or just disappears. And you're in this, I'm going to do it mode. I'm going to become a better person. I'm going to improve my devotional service. Without the purpose behind it, without the person who you're trying to please by doing so, and the spiritual strength to do so. That's like misplaced compassion. Where you may extend yourself to help another person, but if you do that in the doership mentality, that's minus Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness is there's a natural compassion, but the natural compassion is from the beginning and the middle and in the end, it's to please Krishna, and to please Krishna, and to please Krishna. And part of what pleasing Krishna is X, or Y, or Z, but it's, the one in front of the X or the Y or the Z. All the way. With full dependence upon Krishna. Bharat Maharaj didn't do that. He became Kshatriya again, giving protection. And he became so absorbed that he just forgot Krishna. And he forgot his practices that are meant to remind him. As far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. However, by the grace of Krishna, we may raise a person to spiritual consciousness if we ourselves follow the rules and regulations. If we give up our spiritual activities and simply become concerned with the bodily comforts of others, we will fall into a dangerous position. His point is that material well-being, as well as suffering, it's already established. We don't have to go out of our way to get suffering. It comes. And we don't have to go out of our way to get the happiness that is destined by the laws of nature as well. It comes. And someone else, there's some situation. The factor that, for a devotee, the factor that we want is to bring the mercy of Krishna into the lives of others. And whatever, to whatever degree we have received that mercy of Krishna, we can bring that mercy of Krishna into the lives of others. We just become an instrument of Krishna's mercy. We don't become the doer to fix someone else's problem. It's just Maya on top of Maya to think like that. It doesn't have an auspicious outcome. We fall into the material consciousness and the other person doesn't become elevated into spiritual consciousness either. The real well-being of the other individual, it's like adjusting the shadow. Instead of addressing the object, it's casting the shadow. Spiritual well-being should be seen first. And part and parcel of that spiritual well-being may very well be the situation the person is in to help their spiritual consciousness expand and become strong. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. Therefore, it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tal labhyate dukkavad anyata sukham. Or, translation, as far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. So it doesn't say don't go out of your way to help your neighbor or your fellow man or your another devotee. That's not the message. The message is don't abandon or see the higher purpose. Let that become something that's part and parcel of a higher purpose. If your purpose of life is clear, then your interactions with others, the purpose of them, will also be clear. Because of the time factor, I'm not going to read all of the other nice things that Prabhupada presents it. I'll just summarize. He raises the question, how is it possible for someone on such an elevated state of devotion to fall to a state of just forgetting completely spiritual practice? The stage that Bharat Maharaj had attained was a very advanced stage, Bhava Bhakti. So let's, we're down here and Bhava Bhakti's up there. From Bhajana Kriya, Anarcha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, like just before Prema. Bharat Maharaj had attained that stage and he left that stage. His condition of consciousness was nearly perfected, but he left it. A point that's made by Shukadeva Goswami in explaining this is it was done deliberately. mean, at least knowingly. He, Bharat Maharaj, consciously chose to act on the material platform. It's like a residual tendency from previous material involvement. And he chose that. You've heard this example before. There's a fan that's spinning and you pull the blades of the fan and they don't subside immediately, but slowly they become slower, slower, and then stop. So that metaphor is used to describe so similarly when we're taking up devotional service, there may be some residual tendencies, even reactions from our past misdeeds that seem to be playing themselves out in our lives. But slowly, it will stop. As long as you don't put the plug back in and turn the switch on. But if you knowingly put the plug back in and turn the switch on, then the blades of the fan will resume. And that's essentially what Rishabdev, what Bharat Maharaj did. Because of his devotional service, he was released from all the reactions of his past misdeeds. The tendency was still there. And he chose to act on tendency. Knowingly, he acted that way. Knowing that it would cover his devotional position. He left all of that opulent, glorious, wonderful position that he had in the world to achieve and deepen his spiritual practice, but he left it because of this residual tendency, consciously choosing. And he paid a very dear price. So, what's the message for us? Some people, when they hear this, they get like sad or worse, depressed. Like, gee, if this can happen to Bharat Maharaj, what about me? I might as well toss in the towel right now. You get to the Baba stage and you can fall down and I'm this little pipsqueak. I can't, you know, I can hardly keep my program going. But that's the wrong way to take it. It's, we have to be, whatever the stage of life, we have to be cautious. Whatever, there's this saying, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. As you make gradual progress in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean now you have the leeway to be negligent. As you make progress in Krishna consciousness, rather, you should become more practiced at being vigilant and attentive, not casual. Not engaging yourself, allowing yourself, the mind or the senses, to be engaged in worldly distractions. Or Prabhupada called it flirting with Maya. He said that specifically about his American disciples, but I don't think it only applies to American devotees. He said, you have this tendency, you want to see how far you can go. Like, go out on a branch, on a limb, and see how far you can go before you hear a crack. Then you have to go back to the trunk of the tree because you could fall. But don't do like that. Stay very close to the standard practices and the standard principles. Like somebody was asking me, about, they sent me an article about how sabudana is made. Does anybody know how sabudana is made? I can hardly even pronounce it properly. Huh?
Sabudana is a right word.
Okay. Well, there's something, it's made in a way that has animal product in it. At least, you know, some brands commonly is made that way. I don't know. Somebody sent an article and said, you know, what should I do? They say, I don't know about these things. There's another devotee that knows about these things. You know, they're really persnickety. They're really particular about, you know, don't eat things that are prepared in a wrong way. So he sent it to this other devotee. And the other devotee said, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, one of the rules of thumb is, when in doubt, you don't eat it. It's real simple, right? Instead of like, well, should I or shouldn't I? It's just, if you have a doubt, you don't offer it, you don't eat it. Simple. As you go along the path of life and you have different choices to make, in some cases, you know, a career choice, in some cases, it's, you know, association choice, in some cases it's a behavior choice, in some cases it's a, should I read this choice, should I go, whatever it is. You're making choices, we're all making choices of different kinds. Bear in mind, like, the very seat of consciousness that's behind choice making is, what's our mission in life? While we're passing through the moments and the days and the years and our lifetime, what's our life mission? What's our purpose of life? What's like in here that's meant to be fulfilled by this human form? And it's our relationship with Krishna. Let that guide that principle along with the instructions of scripture and Guru Sadhu Shastra. Let that guide you and stay faithful to that, stay protected by that principle. Those that are, I was quoting this to another devotee who like didn't want to hear it. When you abide by Dharma, you're protected by Dharma. I mean, it's very basic. And then, you know, they wanted to get into this thing, well, you know, Dharma means truth. And the truth of the matter is, you know, something, something. It was more just like a statement of, like, where he's at, you know. And I'm not prepared to follow this principle. And I'm just being truthful, so I'm protected by Dharma. Okay, that's your rendering of what Dharma is. And then here's my rendering of Dharma. You know, that's not to be done. So I'm going to follow that standard. And by so doing, I'll be protected. Because protected from what? Protected from my own impurity or tendency for misusing my free will and forgetting Krishna that brought me to this material world. I like to become free from that, or protected from that tendency. So I'm going to make a very basic free will choice that says, say yes to Krishna. Now specific to the Bharat Maharaj, the whole Leela is, where do we repose compassion? I'm bringing this up because it's something that we all face. Like, we want to help other people. As we make spiritual progress, you want to help other people. Make your choices of how to do so. Ideally, make it with proper guidance, but that guidance is also under certain principles. It's that which is going to help myself become closer to Krishna and the other person become closer to Krishna. Whatever it is that I'm going to do, let it be on that, let that be the principle that's overarching all of the things that I do in the exhibition of or extending compassion, care and concern for another or others, plural. On the platform of the soul and the well-being of the soul. And that may very well have to do with some obstacle that someone has on the physical platform or their mind platform. But it should be with that purpose. Krishna should be pleased that this, let this soul come closer to you. You're protected. I'll share the same point from another perspective and then I'll end. One of my duties during part of my brahmachari days in the Brooklyn Temple was organizing Sankirtan. And we had this wonderful practice. Of course, we had many more devotees living in the temple than many temples have today. At one point, there were 150 devotees living in two brownstone buildings. I mean, it was rocking. Mangal Arati was really like, and Gaura Arati was, we had some of the best kirtan singers in the whole movement. Bharadraj and Agni Dev and Vishnu Vidhan. It was like an all-star cast. It was really wonderful. And my service was, we organized the book distribution, and on Saturdays, everybody in the temple went on book distribution, at least for part of the day. And most of it was the whole day, like Saturday. It was Saturday Sankirtan. It was a blast. So the devotees were so absorbed that they would, you know, go out very early and come back sometimes very late. And one of the things that we found as venues was drive-in movies. Because that's like goes to really late at night. But you know, can you imagine drive-in movies in New York City? Dangerous. You know, you knock on someone's door to give them a book and you get plugged. So one devotee, his name was Radha Vallabha. Later he became the production manager for the BBT during that era that they produced those 17 volumes in 2 months. So he's a very wonderful devotee. I remember sitting with him in the middle of the Sankirtan floor at 1 or 1:30 in the morning or something like that, saying, you know, when we're just acting for Lord Chaitanya's pleasure, we're protected. We used to go to rock concerts. This is a little anecdote that just flashed in my mind. Any of you know who Druta Karma is? Druta Karma Prabhu? He's, you know, forbidden archaeology, and like, you know, a scientist. Where we met Druta Karma was at a Grateful Dead concert. Somewhere in upstate New York. I remember, it was four of us, we went, and you know, it meant Grateful Dead concerts to all of you you don't know what that means, but it's like intoxication left, right, and sideways. People would go completely intoxicated. So our program was, we made these buckets of burfi, and that the music was so loud people couldn't hear us. So we just said, you know, here, take some, and just, you know, put our hand in the bucket, because by the end it was just got all mush. So you started with the squares of burfi and it ended up like mush. Just took it and put it in their hand and said, eat it. But they're so intoxicated and they go, wow, this is good. And you give a donation, here's a book. It's just like that was all he had to say. Because they knew who we were. We were the Hare Krishna, you know, walking around in our dhoti and Hare Krishna guys in there, you know, spaced out at the concert and smoking dope. And, you know, so he was seated outside. When we went in, he was outside and we gave him a Sri Ishopanishad. And by the end of the concert, we went outside and he was still sitting there reading Sri Ishopanishad. He didn't go into the concert. He was just reading Sri Ishopanishad and he, like, really liked it. So we gave him some more books and gave him some more whatever burfi we had left, and he gave whatever Lakshmi he had, and we went home. And he read those books and started writing into the BBT and became a devotee from that. You know, those were the point that Radha Vallabha was making, those were the kinds of things that was our Maya. And here we are going right into the, you know, den of Maya and completely protected, because our mission was Lord Chaitanya. Mission wasn't, oh, I get to go to the concert and, you know, and do some Sankirtan at the same time. We're completely unconcerned with the external thing. So there we are sitting in the middle of the Sankirtan room floor saying, you know, these people and what they're doing in the cars that are driving, you know, don't need to describe it. That, you know, but we're just like on Lord Chaitanya's mission. It's not entering our consciousness. It's not disturbing or agitating our consciousness because we're just serving him. But, you know, 2 mornings from now, we're in our, you know, there's the men on this side and the ladies on that side, and, you know, my mind may become agitated because if I'm not in the same consciousness of serving the Supreme Lord, you follow the example. The mind, if we're protected by the mood of serving Krishna, so compassion should be exhibited in the same mood. That this is an exhibition of my love for Krishna. May my love for Krishna become strengthened by this. And the person who I'm interacting with, may their love for Krishna be strengthened by this. And you may be you may be a doctor in a hospital, you may be giving out food for life prasadam, or you may be whatever it is that you're doing that's an act of compassion. Distributing books, or inviting somebody to the temple, or receiving a guest at the temple, or passing the ghee lamp, or whatever it is that you're doing, that some service unto others, cultivate, and it will become your protection, that you're doing this to enrich your love for Krishna and enhance, help others develop their love for Krishna. And then all the persons involved are collectively going to Krishna. And the detachment from the worldly circumstance subsides. And you leave that principle out. This is what the Bharat Maharaj story and the purports are describing. You can fall from your spiritual position. And then you're not able to help the other person or yourself. Which is exactly what Prahlad Maharaj said to his father. When his father became like all huffy and angry and saying, "No, Prahlad, where did you learn this? Devotion to Vishnu." And Prahlad's reply was, "Don't worry, father, you are not going to learn this. Not by your own effort, not by others trying to help you, or the combination of the two. It's just not going to happen, don't worry." If you're holding on to some material conception, the material conception you need to let go of, and the spiritual conception, that is the purpose of what the real essence of compassion is, should be the driving force, that as we spiritually progress and we feel compassion, it's exhibited or it's reposed properly. Then we'll be able to do real service in spiritual compassionate position. And without, becomes very muddied at best. Hare Krishna. I hope it's relevant to things that you're considering. Any comments or questions?
Comment, question, both. starting with the Bharat Maharaj being a devotee of high level to the stage of Bhava Bhakti after so much austerities, as you said. And all of a sudden he is falling down because he was compassionate and he forgot his spiritual identity. Okay.
And spiritual practice.
Passion. Okay. That was his sign of compassion. Okay. On the other side, when we say that Krishna is a protector and very compassionate. Okay. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita.
He took care of him.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I protect what you have and I carry on what you lack. Number one. Number two, he also said, when you are constantly in devotion of me, I give you the intelligence, you come to me. So my question is that, why Krishna chose Bharat Maharaj and in such a stage? Was it a setup by Krishna? And you are saying that he chose it on his own.
Yes.
So, how, here is a Krishna, after he is doing so much devotion and all that,
Krishna
is letting him come to
I got your message. wind it down. It's making me quiet. Okay. Two things. Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will. Bharat Maharaj made a free will choice. Krishna didn't interfere with it. It's not that Krishna didn't say, are you sure you want to do this? But Bharat Maharaj was, he wanted to do this. He willfully chose that the path that he took. And the other is the references that you made, I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. What's the first part of that verse? Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate. What about that part? Ananya chintayanto mam. Unto those who, with undivided attention, unto those persons, Bartmar's checked out. Krishna doesn't interfere with free will. He gives the intelligence by which one can come to him, but there's a preamble to that verse too. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. If you check out, Krishna doesn't interfere with your free will. He gives the opportunity whereby he'll give you intelligence, he'll preserve what you have, he carries what you lack. He'll do left and right and sideways. He has thousands of hands and he'll give you more than you can handle. That's if there's a voluntary choice on your side to take his shelter. But if someone's running the other direction, he doesn't knock them over and say, you can't do that. You have to be my devotee. Or else. And by the way, there isn't an or else. There's only one choice. That's not what Krishna does. He made a choice. Some residual tendency from the material side of compassion that was misplaced. So, the lesson is, always remember Krishna. And those activities that we do should be done for Krishna. Not just compassion, because I'm compassionate. And done in such a way that Krishna will be pleased, and Krishna will be, that's the lesson. We're drawing ourselves closer, and that person who we're interacting with in a compassionate way closer. Or whatever it is that we do, it has that purpose and outcome. And is properly guided. That's the message. Anything? Yes?
Maharaj, in that example of compassion that you were giving on the material platform and the spiritual platform.
Yes.
Regarding that, a patient comes to a doctor and he knows the doctor charges $50 for his service, and patient asks doctor, I have $25. Can you provide this service for me? And doctor, feeling material compassion, says, yes. Okay, I'll take $25 and provide the service. So that's a strictly material compassion. Now, the same example, if the patient comes to the doctor, and the doctor is a Krishna conscious doctor. So he asks the same question, $25, and doctor says, yes, I'll take $25. But in his heart, the doctor is thinking he's a soul, and Lord is providing me an opportunity to provide this service to him. And by providing this service to him, may this soul at some time in future or now, get Krishna consciousness or something. So then this second example, that's on the spiritual platform.
It's the beginning of the spiritual platform. Because one can do other things from the position of being a doctor. And those that are doctors know what those things are. I've spoken to doctors who know what those things are. They're restricted by their profession. a certain professional ethics they have to. But so what you said is it's a beginning.
Okay.
It's you know the relationship that the devotee doctor has with Krishna because of their devotion for Krishna, they're praying on behalf of, or Krishna, show your mercy upon this soul. Yeah. But, you know, there's other things. But, yes, that's the beginning.
So it doesn't have to be expressed. It can be
expressed. It can be from the heart and not verbally expressed.
Okay. Thank you.
Just like, you know, you being in the workplace. You can be acting in the workplace for the welfare of others, although you're not necessarily saying, you know, please take this Bhagavad Gita and read a verse a day or something. By being consciously a representative of Krishna in the workplace, you can be serving others. And Krishna will give you opportunities to be explicit. Anything else? Yes?
What happens to Bharat Maharaj after he takes the knife of a deer? Is it like... Because he has previous merit, does Krishna help him to reach him easily, or does he have to go through all the evolution process?
He got a shortcut. He was given remembrance, although he was in the body of a deer. He was given remembrance of his life as Bharat Maharaj. He went to the very same place, Prabhas Ashram, and he stayed there as a deer, and he heard the sages discussing spiritual topics, and he took the remnants of food, their prasad, Mahaprasad. He was like a smart deer. And he lived the full duration of the life of a deer, and in his next life he took birth in a Brahmin family. It was an interlude. So a special dispensation because of his elevated position. Prabhupada compares it in the Bhagavatam purports to persons that live in the holy dham. They have great fortune being in the holy dham, but they misuse that great fortune in some fashion. They make some great offense. So such persons, he specifically says, they may become turtles, they may become hogs, they may become dogs in the dham. And in their next life, they go back to Godhead. So it's unique. It's a short duration confinement or difficult circumstance. So, best to live in the dham and best to not make offenses. Best to take up the path of devotional service and be vigilant to not have compassion tendencies be misplaced. That's why I chose to speak on this topic. But in his case, he became a deer. And next life, he became a Brahmin. By birth. But, you know, on the topmost platform of devotional service. He learned his lesson. Yes?
Is there something called compassion to the self? Or is it given by others?
Yes. That's where compassion begins. Or I like to use the phrase, charity begins at home. And home can mean, you know, home, but home also means the self. That's like, home is where the heart is. There's where the heart is. So, you can't extend to others something that you don't have. So be good at, become very good or very qualified at receiving mercy so that you can distribute it.
So you become the via medium.
Yeah, exactly. You become an instrument of Krishna by receiving from Krishna, distributing what Krishna gives, or representatives of Krishna give. You become Krishna's representative in turn. Yes?
Well, the interest in the audience, I mean, are there, can you give just some examples of how they can show spiritual compassion versus material compassion?
Yeah, distribute books, go in Harinam, distribute prasadam. When people come to the temple, receive them very nicely, make them, you know, serve them. Because that's a wonderful opportunity, because it's immediately that liking that, you know, we may like to have nice social exchanges, but that liking then, because Krishna's at the center, brings spiritual benefit to them. And there's, you know, different, so many long lists. the most important thing is to see that the principle is in place. Spiritual, the elevation of spiritual consciousness or elevation of Krishna consciousness. That's why Prabhupada didn't give a long list. He just described the principle. I mean, just because we just did it, here's an example. Like taking the group of devotees, or going together with a group of devotees to the Holy Dham together. And, you know, the whole group was doing different things. You know, these the devotees from your Houston youth group, they were leading the kirtan, and someone else was doing the prasadam, someone else was doing the organizing, someone else was doing this. And so we're all doing something according to propensity, but collectively it's enhancing and enriching the Krishna consciousness of everyone. So we'll each take our propensity and do that in service unto Krishna. And the result was elevation of Krishna consciousness. And, you know, we got to see new places and all those things that people like to do. But it wasn't tourism. It was enriching Krishna consciousness and feeling some attachment for Krishna. Anything else? We're okay. Okay, so kirtan a little bit. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.